Happy Wednesday. It's Pat Kreitlow. This is Up North News. Coming up in our next hour, four women running for legislative seats across western Wisconsin, along with incumbent Assembly Rep Jody Emerson from Eau Claire. Carolyn Fiddler from Courier Newsroom, political editorial director, joins me now. She was at Netroots Nation, a big progressive conference in Pittsburgh late last week. And we're going to talk about a few of the other states just to get a lay of the national landscape before we bring this all back and tie a bow on it with Wisconsin. But you did mention growing up in Virginia. Was the actual town called Middle of Nowhere? Or
no, the town was called Warsaw. It's in the northern.
Worse off, like you're worse off by living here?
No, Warsaw, like as in Poland.
Okay. You can see where I get that impression.
Yes.
My favorite Virginia story, my only Virginia story, but it's hilarious, is that somebody who was in Washington, D.C. at the time when the coronavirus vaccine was first available. And remember how like nobody could get it because there was such demand among the smart people who wanted to get it. And, you know, this friend desperately wanted that, but didn't also want to wait, like, say, in, you know, crowded places or whatnot, and had the good sense to go online and research what counties in central Virginia where you could get to from DC had the highest Trump turnout. She then called pharmacies in that area and heard, yep, plenty of vaccine here, come on down. Wow. So by making just a quick drive, was able to get the vaccine by playing Virginia politics in their head. So yeah, that's I would not have thought of that, which is what makes my friend smarter than me. But I thought you
thought you'd
get a kick out of that.
That's how Luke. I did it here in Wisconsin, Pat.
No way.
Yeah, Madison. It was very, very difficult to get a vaccine right away in Madison, and therefore I took a little drive to Trump country here in Wisconsin, and boom, tons of vaccines available there. It was easy to get an appointment.
But didn't you have a tough time? I mean, I'm assuming you rode a horse and your horse couldn't get ivermectin because that was off the shelf. So
no, this was before ivermectin even really was all the rage on the right.
Before Ron Johnson was telling us to gargle more with mouthwash.
Exactly.
And everything else. Okay. let's take ourselves back to the Netroots Nation workshops and talk about all of these other states. There was one that I wanted to get to before the break. There it is, redistricting and gerrymandering and, you know, threats to democracy, frankly, January 6th, all of those things. Those of us who pay close attention to the news, I mean, this is all second nature to us. There are some of us who know that the number of documents that were found, you know, and taken from Trump is no longer 350. It's more like 700. But only a sliver of us know that. And we sometimes get caught up in this and think, well, if we talk about gerrymandering, if we talk about threats to democracy, that will be an effective message. Other people say, nope, A, that's too inside baseball. And B, they think you're overreacting, that there is no threat to democracy. Again, these are insiders at the conference. But what was their take on messages to voters about these kinds of things?
Well, their take was that, and I am inclined to agree, that making the stakes clear in terms of democracy being on the line isn't hyperbolic, and people understand that it's not. People have seen the threats. People have been watching the January 6th hearings. People know what's at stake, and making sure folks remember that isn't hyperbolic. It's not going to turn people off. It's going to make people aware and help people understand that their vote extremely matters in November. And redistricting was once seen as insider baseball, but I like to think we kind of started moving away from that in 2012 when Democrats got, you know, about 3 million more votes for the U.S. House and yet came away with a minority of seats. So it's gotten a little easier for folks to understand since then, and it's still a big part of the conversation. And voters aren't dumb. They're just, they just have things going on. They have real lives and can only care about a finite number of things, but they're not dumb and they understand what's going on with redistricting and the fact that our very democracy is in peril.
It is, though, as I've given Bill Clinton credit for many a time, to first acknowledge that other person's pain, the angst, the anxieties that they have. It may not be on the same scale as, you know, losing democracy. But again, in that household, this is the thing right now, whether it's affording daycare, having any daycare availability at all, having health care, the lack of paid leave. You know, these things still make that first connection. Would I be right in saying make that first connection with the voter based on, you know, what they talk about at their kitchen table? But maybe unlike in the past where you'd kind of skip the let's save democracy message, you actually then put that in as well, but you don't necessarily lead with it.
I think that's right, because folks have a lot going on. We all have a lot on our minds these days, and it's been almost 3 years of pandemic world now, and things are still scary and uncertain. We've just kind of gotten used to it, and there's a lot of uncertainty out there. And this, we actually discussed this on a panel, like it's possible for candidates to tap into that anxiety. Youngkin did it very successfully in Virginia last year when he tapped into parental anxiety around schools and education. It wasn't really CRT. It was just he made parents feel heard and listened to in a way that Terry McAuliffe, who lost the governor's race last year in Virginia, did not. So yes, acknowledging folks' pain and meeting them where they are is incredibly important, but then you might be surprised where they're willing to go.
That's interesting that you come back to Youngkin and CRT, because what you see in Wisconsin now is, I think, something where, again, this playbook has worked before, but maybe they're trying to go back to the well one too many times. In this case, we're talking about scaring people about crime. It's no accident that yesterday, on the second anniversary of a terrible night, a terrible day and night in Kenosha, rather than talking about police violence or the need for police reform, Tim Michaels and others talked about, you know, the fires and the riots and the violence rather than, you know, the root cause of all of that. And while most people have moved on, this is a borderline obsession for Michaels and others who, for them, that's the proxy for crime overall. Again, my question being, do they risk going back to the well one too many times, and that people are more focused on their issues in the here and now? Or can that, you know, scary message still work in a statewide race in a place like Wisconsin?
I think they're going back to the well too many times. This was a year ago, and it's important to observe, you know, the anniversary of that terrible, terrible day and night and recognize what happened. But that was a long time ago, and folks have real immediate pressing concerns right now that involve, as you said, can I afford daycare? Can I afford gas? Can I afford groceries? And, you know, inflation is tapering off, gas prices are coming down, but these concerns are still very much in the forefront of folks' minds in the way that violence in Kenosha isn't. People react to what they experience every day.
It's just a reminder of what worked in 2018 for progressives. It was very much what worked for Tony Evers, fix the damn roads. Mm-hmm. Roads and bridges and things, you know, that touch on your hometown still connect with voters.
Exactly.
Rather than big, scary concepts. Tell me about a couple of the other workshops or panel discussions that you attended and were impressed by at Netroots Nation.
Well, I'm a little biased, but I did moderate a panel about media and misinformation and ways to hold the media accountable in either fighting the spread of, or, you know, in terrible cases, promoting misinformation, and how memes get from the far right wing into CNN and things like that. And it was a really good discussion. We had a lot of great perspectives. We had someone from Voto Latino to talk about misinformation in the Latinx community. We had someone from Media Matters to talk about sort of corporate media and platforms. We had Melissa Ryan, who's just a general right-wing disinfo expert. And we had someone from our own Courier newsroom to talk about ways that media can actually fight the spread of misinformation by putting out really good quality pro-democracy information.
There was, I don't know if this was Renata Robinson from the New Georgia Project. Was that the same panel? I'm looking just at a write-up about disinformation and saying that, you know, large amounts of disinformation focus on convincing voters that their vote doesn't matter. So it's not about convincing people to change their vote, but about convincing people not to vote at all, to stay at home. Right. And Robinson highlighted the importance of being sensitive when handling voters who fall victim to this lie, rather than making them feel stupid, because disinformation is doing what it is designed to do, convincing and upsetting unsuspecting victims, and no one wants to feel that they have been deceived or ashamed. So it gets to that notion of cutting through disinformation and really lifting that person up and reminding them, as I say over and over and over again in our Up North News coverage, your vote matters.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. No, that was actually a different panel, but fighting misinformation was a big theme of Netroots this year. There were several panels on it, and that's an incredibly important point. Making folks feel stupid doesn't help. It doesn't make them, doesn't sway them. It just makes them want to sit out or rail harder against, you know, whatever it is you're trying to convince them of. And that doesn't help anybody.
Well, for some of us who are have terrible poker faces, I'm hoping they then invent a drug that prevents eye rolling, because that I know that's happened one too many times. If somebody spouts something to me that they heard on some channel someplace, I'd like to think, well, I do think that most of the time I'm rather empathetic and addressing things, you know, in an informative and friendly way. But I do worry that before I got to that point, I've already given away the game by just giving them a look like, what are you listening to this for? And I guess we have to be more careful not to do that.
It's hard. But yes, I also have zero poker face and find that very relatable. But it's hard. And it was just important to, you know, kind of decenter yourself and remember, try to remember where people are coming from. People are scared, and fear can make people do and believe like really out there things.
Mm-hmm. All right. So apart from ones that you participated in, because you're such a big deal now, what else did you see?
Oh, gosh, I saw a lot of spent some time on Radio Row. It was nice to see folks back and on the air in person. There were some excellent keynotes. We had the leader of AFT and the leader of my former employer, Daily Kos, get up there and help with the final keynote speech and remind people what's at stake this fall. And motivate folks to get out there and work hard to elect Democrats this fall. And we found out the next year's convention is going to be in Chicago. That's exciting. so I'll be up in your neck of the woods next year. Yeah,
well, that would be great to see you. Would it be fair to say that, again, in the tempering expectations / motivating people column, is simply the notion that Ron Johnson, for all of the stuff he says and does and believes in and spreads, has still managed to win election twice. So you still can't count out all the cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs stuff that comes out of his mouth.
That's true. I mean, incumbency is a hell of a drug, as they say. And something about him appeals to enough Wisconsin voters. We'll see if that holds true again this fall, because I feel like the last few years he's really doubled down on his extremism. But, you know, there's a long time between now and November. But, you know, his opponent is a hell of a candidate. And I do think that I am cautiously optimistic.
Well, and that's the thing. Mandela Barnes is so smart about these things. He has the experience, he has the background to stay on message despite a lot of stuff that's going to be thrown at him. It's just that we look at Ron Johnson and we think, could this be any weirder? And then I look at Georgia and Herschel Walker, and I'm sorry, I feel pity that he's in this position. Is still going to get a lot of votes, but is, you know, in this position and I guess could win.
Oh yeah, it's still Georgia, and he's still a Republican who thinks that there aren't enough trees. It's hard to keep track of his latest hit down there in Georgia, but he is not the strongest candidate the Republicans could have put forth for this seat. And hopefully that helps Democrats in the fall, because it'd be awfully nice to keep the Reverend Senator Warnock in the Senate.
Yes, again, another brilliant and great person that you can have represent you. So between that note and J.D. Vance not doing well in Ohio, and Doug Mastriano and Dr. Oz, just whatever it is that they do and whatever it is they drink in the morning, there are these signs of hope. So Carolyn Fiddler, we appreciate the visit, and you know, thanks for keeping things tempered, but you know, on the good side of it. So great to see you.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great day. We'll come back to wrap up this hour next. You're up north.